Welcome to Street Knowledge. I am Chris Graham, and I've got Scott German with me here. We're going to talk some UVA football as Cavs coming off the bye week following that big win over Boise State a couple of weeks ago. Start ACC play on Saturday, 12:20 kickoff in Charlottesville with Duke coming into town, and Duke coming in off a 31-6 loss to Miami. So interesting to me, Scott, that despite, you know, what I just said there, Virginia on the road beating Boise State 42-23 a game that wasn't even that close, Miami coming in off of a big blowout loss at home to Miami, still a two-point favorite as we head into Saturday. Your thoughts heading into this matchup, UVA and Duke on Saturday?
Well, I'm not really surprised that Virginia's the underdog. I think there's still plenty of naysayers out in Vegas that might not be quite sold on this UVA resurgence as we are, or hopefully we are. So, Duke's a solid team. And Virginia, you know, we don't know. We still don't know. The season's getting a little old, but we still don't know exactly the quality of wins that we've gotten, how Boise State, as we talked off the air, has not played since losing to Virginia last Friday night. They play Saturday against BYU, so that might be a good indicator to see how they respond. So I think the verdict is still out for most of the pundits as far as can Virginia play a full 60 minutes of football against the quality ACC foe. It is at home, so you have to think that home field is going to give us some advantage, but lately home field hasn't really meant a lot to Virginia.
I'll throw two things out, talking Boise State. Now, they didn't play last week, as we both mentioned, so let's look back in their recent history this season. They played two games earlier this season that these two teams might ring a bell with you, what they did this past weekend. They struggled in their opener to beat Troy. Troy went this past weekend, beat LSU at LSU. They also then, Boise State the following week, had a 3-touchdown lead in the fourth quarter, blew it, lost in 3 overtimes to Washington State, who beat USC this past weekend. So you know, I Scott, was saying, you know, after the win over Boise State, well, I'm not too sure, you know, maybe this isn't your father's Boise State. They left home against Troy. They lost to this Wazoo team, and who knows how good they are. Those two teams are a little better. This Duke team does have a win over Northwestern. Northwestern played Wisconsin tough this past weekend. But then, yeah, that blowout loss to Miami was a surprise. Duke was actually favored going into that game, and Miami controlled all the way. Now, let me point this out to you, since I'm pointing things out. Virginia, last time we had a shot, last time we thought we had a shot at a winning season was 2014. We started out 4-2 that year and actually had a 2-0 record in ACC play heading into a mid-October game at Duke. Played Duke well, couple turnovers, bad special teams play. You kind of heard that story before. Virginia lost that game to Duke and ended up losing 5 of their last 6. So we've been in this position before going into a game with Duke with a chance to win Virginia this weekend. If you're 4-1 with it, win over Duke, win over Boise State, go ahead and make your travel plans for December. You're going to be playing in a bowl game. But, you know, yeah, we've been here before. We've kind of looked back after going into this game with a Duke team that it's still pretty good. They're 4-1 coming into this game.
Well, you stole a little bit of my thunder because I was going to refer back to just a couple years ago when we were riding kind of high and then ran up against Duke and lost. Had chances to win in that game, if your memory is decent. I mean, had many chances to win. Probably should not have lost. And then after that loss, the wheels completely fell off the wagon. So, here's where I think personally, and I'm, self-admitted homer, here's where I think the difference could be. In that Duke-Virginia game a few years ago, even the most ardent UVA fans watching that game probably, and if you notice the fans are thinking this, it's got to be creeping into the minds of the players, or at least some of them. What are we going to do to screw this up? I think the difference is now is that these kids are buying into Broncos' system, and it's building confidence. So they're not waiting for the other shoe to drop. they're waiting to drop something, you know, and I believe that might be the big difference here, is that we're playing a lot more confident, and we're not out there thinking, okay, it's just a matter of time before we do something stupid, we make a bad call, we have too many players on the field, we inadvertently call a timeout, we call a timeout when we shouldn't, or should call a timeout when we shouldn't, things like that. I believe this is a different mentality, at least my opinion, what I'm seeing. Hopefully it plays out on Saturday, but that they're just playing a lot more confidence. And I don't think there's anybody that would say Duke's got a tremendous amount more talent. They're just well coached, and they know they play within the system of Cudmus. And so, you know, I'm hoping for good things.
You know, I'll come off your point there. I totally agree with the confidence. You know, Scott, you and I were among the many stoppers you talked about when Bronco Mendenhall said he's going to change the culture. Every coach comes in and says comes into a program that's had, you know, limited success, no success over a period of time. New coach, I'm going to change the culture of this school. I'm going to change the culture of this program. Didn't see it last year. You know, that 2-10 season, you finish up with the 7-game losing streak. Did not sense changing culture. But I'll tell you, a couple of Friday nights ago, at Boise State, you could see, as that game wore on, that Virginia team had not gone into that game thinking, hey, if things go perfectly, we don't commit a turnover, we get them to commit a couple turnovers, we might win this game by 1 point in the last play. They went into that game thinking they would stomp on their throat and bleed them dry, and they did that. And you could see, as that second half wore on particularly, The dancing on the sidelines, the celebratory mood. I wouldn't say celebratory or dancing in a arrogant way. I would say in a, gosh, isn't this fun? We're finally having fun out here kind of way. And the fan base has picked up on it. If you look at the message boards, if you look at Twitter and Facebook, Virginia fans are finally like, hey, it's been a long, long time since we've been able to be proud this time of year about our football program. And, but those sounds on the sidelines is where it starts, and I think you're right, Scott. I mean, I think they don't go into these games out thinking, hey, maybe if things go the right way, we might win a game. You're right. 3 years ago, that game at Duke, I was at that game. I actually covered that game from the press box there at that small stadium at Duke, Wallace Wade Stadium. The press box is it doubles during the week as a medical center building. They Virginia outgained Duke severely in that game. But turnovers, bad field position, bad special teams. I mean, you're waiting for the wheels to fall off. You eventually did in the fourth quarter. Under Mike London, the last couple of years of Mike Rowe, I think folks, the team was in that mindset of, hey, what are we going to do to screw this in? And I'm with you, Scott. I think that now, you know, whether they go out and win or lose, they're going out to win. And that is a huge difference from where we've been the last several years.
Absolutely. Side story, and I'm not going to mention a name because the conversation we had was certainly not on record. It was strictly a friend to friend. I had dinner with an ex UVA coach, football coach, back to the George Welsh era. And it was after the Boise State win, and we talked a little about football, not a lot, but we did touch on it. And he made a couple of observations that kind of led me up to talking a little bit about the difference in the mentality, the confidence that the players seem to be displaying on the field, and that this individual was not really 100% sold on the Mendenhall hire for some of the reasons that we've discussed, that he coached at BYU, completely different system, a completely different university than Virginia, with the players being able to go away for a couple of years and coming back as men, with being able to be selective on your scheduling as to when you played these so-called quote-unquote big teams, not having recruited on the East Coast, basically bringing his entire staff with him, who also hasn't been acclimated to the East Coast. So this particular individual has some reservations about the hire. And of course, last year didn't do a lot to rid any one of those. But he said that the thing that he really felt like there might be something to Mendenhall as far as a system. And then, like you said, everyone talks about when they come in, we're installing a new mentality. We're installing a new system. Everything is going to be changed. Every coach says that. But there might be something a little bit to Mendenhall's words, more than just words. And he saw this, and he thought that there could be more than this when both of the players that we thought were going to be leaving decided to stay. And you and I questioned it. We couldn't understand it. We thought it was silly. We thought it was just risking their NFL careers. But they saw something, and that maybe not just wanted to be a part of a winning program, but that maybe that coaching staff could help them develop into even better players, where with the time under London, they really weren't. And the other thing this ex-coach said to me was, there's a lot of players that just left, and there wasn't a lot of mention about it. That players that just weren't able to buy into his system. And so, you know, I'm hoping that does prove out to be some validity in that, and that some of these players are just seeing the different techniques. And we know Coach London was a wordsmith, but not much substance to it. Coach Mendenhall seems to be able to back up what he's preaching.
Yeah, I would say I remember at the ACC football kickoff talking with Micah Kizer. This year was Clint Blanding. Last year was Micah Kizer. This year talking with Clint Blanding, I wanted to say to him, okay, I'm not asking you a question now. I'm just going to tell you as a fellow, as a UVA alum, you're going to be a UVA alum soon. You should have gone, kid. Did you not learn from one district lesson from 20 years ago? And then kind of shake him a little bit and say, but you're going to do this for a team that's not going to win. Obviously, you know, looking back, I mean, we're 3-1. There's a lot of football still to be played, but 3 wins is more than I thought this team would have all season. So I'll give them credit for that. They've already surpassed my expectations in that sense. I would also say that's more of the behind the scenes cultural kind of stuff. I would say on the field, what I've seen, and I noted this talking with someone in the press box, at the last home game, the Connecticut game a few weeks ago now. Defensively, it seems like, you know, last year, guys were kind of late getting to the play. You know, they weren't flying the ball. They were still kind of thinking while they were running, and you can kind of see that. I mean, you know, guys were, you know, receivers were running past them, running backs were running through them. But I sense that it was more because they didn't know where they were supposed to be and what the scheme was. I'm noticing this year that it feels to me like they're not thinking anymore. They're just playing. You know, now the system is ingrained, and they're playing. And then on top of that, one thing that's a clear difference with this team as opposed to the London era from a couple of years ago, a lot of these guys, of course, the guys who are playing right now, largely the guys who are significantly contributing are still London guys, is the level of fitness. The fitness level of these guys, the strength level of these guys are bulked up in a good way. It's noticeable out there that they're fat. They look like faster guys, stronger guys, especially defensively. I'll give this staff credit too. Last year the offensive line was horrible. This year it's pretty much the guys from last year plus a couple of transfers they've inserted in the lineup. And this year the line's great. They've given up 6 sacks, 3 in the first week. That's third best in the ACC in terms of lowest number. 6 sacks through 4 games. The running game is going to close to 4 yards a carry after the first 2 weeks when they weren't running the ball very well. They've given Binkert plenty of time to stand back there and throw the ball. He's only committed 1 turnover this year. But the line is the key there. So all this said, yeah, it's like, hey, you know, it's sunk in. They're playing football now. They're not thinking, and that's also very important.
Keeping Binkert upright is a good thing.
And it's key. It's pretty spare behind him. I'll go to the press conference from Bronco this week on Monday. Question was asked of him again. And we were the first to bring this up, actually. Scott and I were the first to bring this up, if you're listening out there. After the Indiana game, Scott and I had a discussion on the blog last night and then on our podcast the next week about, okay, Virginia, losing that Indiana game, they were down 17. Why do you bring Banker back out in the fourth quarter? And we were discussing that back and forth. And eventually I came to the conclusion, hey, maybe they're trying to save him for a redshirt. Following week, the Connecticut blowout win, and he didn't play, and Brinker's out there in a blowout win, kind of, mopping up the game. And Mendenhall was asked about that. And, again, at the end of the Boise State game, Devontae Cross finally saw a couple snaps, got hurt. They bring Brinker back out there. Mendenhall asked this week, about the situation with Lindell Stone as the backup. And he reiterated that ideally, he is redshirting this year. That's ideal though. I mean, that's the thing. In football, your quarterback's always a play away from being your former quarterback, and your backup's always a play away from being the starter. So, but best case scenario, yeah, if Baker is upright for 12 games, we're probably playing a 13 and maybe even a 14th game this year. But that's key because he has been wiped out this season. Banker, 10 touchdown passes, just one interception, 66.1% completion percentage, 10% better than last year, 10 points higher than last year. I mean, these are numbers of elite quarterbacks, and it's only four games into the season, but he's playing like a, like an all-AC former.
He's playing like a quarterback that might actually be of interest come April for the NFL draft.
Exactly, yeah.
He's a prototype NFL fast player. Again, the key to
it. He's got a big arm, yeah.
He's got a big arm, big kid. The key to it is keeping him healthy because if he goes down, then we just do not have that depth that we can pick up like everything is status quo. But that's with a lot of teams. I'll give you one team. The same thing applies. You wouldn't think it. Florida State has had the same situation.
Yeah.
They lose their starting quarterback and they're out of the top 25 and they're going to probably be lucky to finish above 500 this year.
Yeah, they had to rally and have a couple breaks on their way to beat Wake Forest. But I thought, that's playing Wake Forest. Wake Forest came in that game unbeaten. But yeah, you go from being number three preseason to barely being able to win at Wake Forest to get your first win at the end of September. Yeah, you're right. That's the prescription for a lot of the programs. I would like to think that it could be the same kind of situation at Virginia Tech. Josh Jackson has looked really good. Didn't look so good against Clemson this past weekend. But, he's put up good numbers this year. But, what does anybody have at number two can do? But in Virginia's case, it's not just what it does short term. I mean, you go to a true freshman quarterback in Lindell Stone, most likely. But also then you set, we talked about this on the podcast for folks who are listening in. But if Virginia has to go to Stone this year, that's one less year of eligibility you have when he's actually going to be established down the line. You'd rather have his fifth year than his true first year. But that said, you look at the numbers, not just Pinkert's numbers, all those numbers I told you earlier, 10 touchdowns, one interception, 66% completion. The guys he's thrown the ball to, Andre Lavroni, we've known Lavroni has been, he had a potential to be a threat. He's averaging 26.8 yards catch, four touchdowns among the 13 receptions. You got Donnie Dowling out there doing the job. The past couple of seasons, Virginia's passing game was throwing the ball to Tyquan Mizell out of the backfield. That's nice. Mizell was a good receiver, actually a elite running back receiver, catching those third down passes, moving the chain, that kind of thing. But when your leading receiver is also a running back, that means you're not attacking very far downfield. And, we've seen the last couple of weeks, Virginia's done a great job stretching defenses, being able to get the ball down the field. That's what helps soften up your running game, soften up the defense for your running game to then bludgeon teams to death, so to speak, which then in turn, brings them back in and you go back over their heads. I mean, if the offense is working about as well as it can, the line's playing great, defensively, the numbers aren't quite as good as they should be. Virginia's giving up 341 yards a game to opponents, but in the last two games, the blowout wins, we've seen a lot of yards, a lot of points given up in the fourth quarter in garbage time. Virginia's defense has been stout. So offensively, defensively, very strong. Special teams, not so much, but they've had a couple of weeks to work on the kicking game, the coverage game, and that kind of thing. It'll be interesting to see, Scott, how it comes out. You'll be there. See how things come out on Saturday with the momentum having been stopped. Bronco talked about that in the press conference, too. He hated the bye week. He wanted to keep playing football. Your thoughts on that? I mean, when you're hot, you're hot. You want to keep playing, but I guess also it's a good chance to maybe lick your wounds a little bit and get everybody healthy, I guess.
Well, if you're going to have an off week, which every college team does, I'd say that was as good a time to have it, in my opinion, because how long has it been since a UVA fan has had this long to rejoice in being a UVA football fan? We've had, by the time we take the field Saturday, 15 days to rejoice that impressive win out in Boise, Idaho on a Friday night, national television. It would have been nice to, I guess, if you believe in the momentum, and momentum in baseball, they say momentum is only as good as your next day starter.
Yeah.
So I don't know how that analogy plays in football, but if we'd gone out and played, say, Duke or whomever the following Saturday, last Saturday, and laid an egg, then we're not having this. We're not having this feel-good conversation. And you don't know how the coaches have, they're out. They're still laying the groundwork for recruiting. They've probably got a lot more kids showing up to be on the sidelines Saturday that they had originally because they had the extra time. So there's a lot of intangibles in that we don't know about. Real quick about the defensive stats, if you, again, using baseball analogy, and I haven't done this, you probably have. Last two games, we've had teams, just mop-up time. Mm-hmm. We've been on the good side of that. If you take those two fourth quarters or the two last halves of the fourth quarter, when the game was in balance, I bet our defensive numbers look a lot more impressive.
I did. I actually did the numbers. I ran the numbers in the last two games. Virginia gave up a total of 41 points in those last two games. 21 of those points from the fourth quarter of those games. Gave up 817 total yards in those two games. 282 of the 817 were in the fourth quarter. Virginia had a 31-0 lead on UConn and a 42-14 lead on Boise State. So those games were well in hand. You're getting guys, you're getting young guys some reps. You're getting your veteran guys to break. Yeah, that's exactly right. I'll jump back, Scott, to what you were talking about with the bye week. It's been great for fans. Like you said, by the time they take the field Saturday, it'll have been 15 days since the big win over Boise State. From a recruiting standpoint, yes, your bye week is a very important recruiting week in the season. That's a time to go out and your staff starts to fan back out across the region to make those connections with reconnect with players and coaches. Now you get to go watch them in practice. You get to watch them on Friday nights in games. And I bet it was probably a little more exciting to have those D-hats on sidelines after the big win over Boise State than it would have been if they'd gone out there with an 0-4 record and just gotten their hats handed to them by Boise State. And then from a team standpoint, I wrote about this after the Boise State game. As much as, you want to go out and ride that momentum, the other side of it is, this is still a relatively young team in terms of learning how to win games. It's the program that has not won a lot of games in the last 10 years, 11 years. And so what happens often with a team that is not used to winning, you have a big win like that one out there. That's obviously a huge win for this program. And if you're playing right the next week, maybe a day or two, the guys' heads are full of sugar plums and dancing fairies, Christmas gifts on Christmas morning or whatever else. And their heads aren't where they need to be, which is getting ready for the next football game. You go out and you lose that game because you're still emotionally reliving last week's game. Well, now all they've been able to do for the last week and a half is tackle each other, block and tackle each other. This is kind of like coming out of summer camp again. They want to go hit somebody else now. And so, good time. You know, if you could have better scheduled that, big win at Boise State, give me a week off and get their heads back at the football game, and then let's play Duke. That's about as good as you can do because, you know, honestly, as far as the rest of the schedule goes, it's ACC games and everything else, but, you know, there's not a Boise State-level opponent in terms of cachet really until your final game of the regular season against Virginia Tech. So it's not like there's going to be any more emotional roller coasters coming up. It's going to be week in, week out, let's go win some football games. But that Boise State game could have been an emotional roller coaster, go up and go way down. And so we've avoided that with a bye week.
Exactly. And, man, what a great year to not have to see Clemson on the schedule or well, maybe Florida State. But, I mean, Florida State's certainly weakened by the loss of the quarterback, but still, you know, they're very talented, very, very talented team. You know, college football, real quickly, I know we probably have to wrap up, but college football is so much different now. It's so much – sometimes I think the more things change, the more they stay the same. But when I was younger, you had your power teams, your five or six or seven, maybe teams that are perennial are going to be perennial top 10 teams. Well, that really hasn't changed. You still have your Ohio State, your Michigans, your Notre Dames, your Alabama, LSUs. But the parity, when you drop down below that, is just amazing. And a couple of reasons, and again, from having spent some time with the next coach, a couple of reasons. First of all, the NCAA scholarship limitation, which was put in effect years ago, had a major impact on that. Players, schools like Texas that used to have 150 players on their roster, literally 150 players.
Yeah.
When they took the field in 1979 against UVA, UVA took a team down to Texas that had a traveling party of 55, and Texas marched out on the field 150. They gave UVA the 30-yard line in the end for pregame warm-ups. And Texas had from the 30-yard line up to midfield and down to the goal line for theirs. So scholarship limitations. The other big factor is nowadays you don't have to play at Alabama to be on TV every single game.
Right, right.
You can a high school player can go wherever he wants if it's proximity to his home, if it's you know, the academics. I say that jokingly. They know they're going to get seen. Their family doesn't have to travel. Family can watch them. Scouts maybe can see things on TV without actually traveling the game. So there's a lot of parity, and that's why a lot of this depth issue, you don't see these teams with two or three All-Americans, four-star recruits backing, standing on the sidelines, glorified cheerleading. So that's where we're trying to reach, get to that level where we're in that group of teams that are pretty darn good on a year-in, year-out basis. I don't know if we'll ever get to that level of Clemson or Ohio State. That's a different – right now it's a little different league that those teams are playing in. But, you know, that's the direction we hope to be going in.
I think it's a reasonable goal for Virginia to be where it was in the George Welch era. It took Welch a few years to get Virginia to that stage, but the stage he got to Virginia to was, hey, we'll win seven games a year, and that's back when you only played 11. We'll go at least 7-4 every year. Some years we might win 8, some years we might win 9. If lightning strikes, we'll win a conference championship. We'll always be in that mix. We'll always be playing big games in Charlottesville. We'll beat somebody on the road that maybe we should beat. We'll play a bowl game. And, you know, like I said, lightning might strike. And you know, maybe you'll get a couple of good recruits and have a chance when they're seniors to do something special with that group. But I think Virginia fans will take that. You know, we got a little fat and happy. You know, we kind of railroaded George, got pushed him out the door at the very beginning of the message board era of college sports, late 1990s, early 2000s. Fans got up in arms over only winning 7 games every year. And I thought, hey, we could do better than this. We could go win a championship. you know, we've learned since then that it's not quite so easy what George Welch was able to accomplish at Virginia. There's a lot of factors that have nothing to do with on-the-field stuff and have everything to do with off-the-field stuff. That's one reason I was complaining a lot this summer. You know, the situation with that the backup quarterback from Missouri, we were trying to get in, and he couldn't get into Virginia, and he's at Vanderbilt now. And, you know, if you're not going to let, you know, good student athletes come play, it makes it harder. But that said, you know, it can be done. George did it. And, you know, and maybe Broncos turn the corner here. And that's you know, it, the win over Boise State gave us some hope. We're heading into Saturday. You're right, Scott. We'll start wrapping up here. Scott's going to be the solo practitioner on Saturday in the press box, 12:20 kickoff. I've got a VMI game to do, so I'll be down the road, and I'm going to regret this one. I guess I'll watch it on the app, at least the first quarter or so. But Scott gets to have all the fun with the Duke game. He'll be leading our live blog. Join him on the blog. We'll have post-game recaps, reaction, etc. I'll try to get into the mix sometime later Saturday myself after my VMI game's over. But Scott's going to be there on our behalf. And, yeah, so check out Augusta Free Press for everything about this game heading into the game, and then, of course, on Saturday as well.
Hey, Chris, do we dare want to make two predictions?
I'll let you do. Go ahead. Make your call.
Okay, we're gonna see a confident UVA team that's gonna play with a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of confidence. I think they've got to take. They know what victory tastes like. They've seen Duke. They saw Duke play Saturday night. Duke is not, informidable team. I'm gonna go UVA 27, Duke 20.
UVA 20. I will avoid giving a final score or even who I think will win, but I'll say this. A couple keys for Virginia in this game. I'm taking the Herb Street analyst cop-out thing here, I guess, because even though I'm not doing this game as an analyst. But I'll say the keys for Virginia, only one turnover through four games this year. One turnover total. If Virginia plays another flawless game offensively in terms of not turning the ball over, they're hard to beat. I think, offensive line, as long as it protects Binkford and clears some space for the running game, that'll be key. Duke has 18 sacks this year, most of the ACC. Virginia's given up the third least in the ACC sacks. So if Virginia can, you know, control the line of scrimmage offensively, and I think Virginia defensively matched up really well with Duke. I really do. So if I was predicting a score, I would go more, I mean, I think a little lower scoring game, I would go more Virginia 20, Duke 10. I don't think Duke moves the ball against Virginia, and I think Virginia does enough to win this game. Again, that 20-10, I think, will feel more like Virginia in control, really, from about the middle of the first quarter on. I really think if Virginia goes out and plays that flawless game in terms of no turnovers offensively, that they're a hard team to beat, and I don't see any reason why, you know, they're not going to, you know, deviate from the game plan. They've been playing so well so far this season. So, I'll go a little lower scoring, but I'll give Virginia the win, too.
We'll find out. Both of us taking UVA, so...
You talked me into it, Scott.
I knew if you kept talking long enough, you'd give me a prediction.
Well, it's hard to avoid it. So 12:20 kickoff, Scott's there. I'll be there in spirit, and then we'll catch back up later in the day on Saturday. We'll recap it for you. In fact, Scott and I, we'll try to get together and do a post-game podcast here. It'll just be a little later than normal because of my duties with BMI football, but... Until then, I want to thank you for listening. Thank you for Scott. Thanks to Scott. Thanks to all the folks listening out there, and we'll talk to you again soon.